Wonderful. So welcome everybody to the Addiction 911 show. I'm so excited to have this wonderful group of panelists here who are all experts. And you be feel free if you're watching the show live to put your comments in below. And even if you're watching the replay, if you have any sort of questions, we will be revisiting it and everybody will be watching it. So you can ask questions and we can, you know, actually type those questions into you, even if you're watching this after, if you've missed the live broadcast. So I want to just go over and start introducing everybody. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to give a quick introduction and have you introduce yourselves. I feel that's the best way. So we're going to start all the way to the left with Robin Berman, and she is a holistic psychotherapist and the founder of Reach Higher Healing. So Robin, give us a little bit of an intro about yourself and your expertise in the addiction field.
Hi, Christina. Just say hi first, and everybody else. I've been in addiction treatment for over 15 years. Most of that has been in, you know, with agencies and in treatment. I've worked with families and individuals and couples. And now I've been in private practice for a few years. And again, my clientele is all couples, individuals, and family work. People who, and most of my clients are, interestingly enough, are all adult children of alcoholics. I don't know how that happened, but yeah. Wow. And many of them are sober for a few years. And I also see couples in recovery, which is really an interesting piece of work that I do. And I also treat people with other more holistic type modalities. I do EMDR, which is not holistic, but I really incorporate the trauma work because that's a big piece here, and Reiki energy, chakra balancing, and sound healing. So I really love that.
Thank you so much for being a guest today. So I'm going to move over to Christopher now. Christopher O'Brien is a master level certified addiction professional, author, and creator of the Who Ball. So I'm going to let him tell you all about that. Christopher.
Good morning. Good afternoon. If you haven't seen, if you're in mental health and you haven't seen the Who Ball, you've got to see the Who Ball. I was at a meeting this morning and someone said, "Oh, you're the guy that made the Who Ball." So it's out there. I've been treating substance disorders for about 11 years. I actually was in the building business and had a friend who was a clinical director at a treatment center and said, "You'd really be good doing groups." So I went and did one group and said, "I like this," and gave up the building business and got my master's degree at the age of 62. My main thrust is my publishing company. I make the Who Ball. I've written a book called Recovery 101, which is a workbook for people in recovery that covers all of the co-occurring disorders that SAMHSA outlines. And then I have a book called Understanding Addiction, which I give to families. It's about 80 pages and it gives them the current knowledge of what addiction is. And then I have a book on a clinical manual called Recovery Counseling, the Compassionate Protocols. Most of my colleagues, we talk about that in many treatment centers, they kind of have an aggressive way of treating clients. And ours is to make the client feel comfortable and make it home, and we treat them with loving kindness, and it has specific practices. And then I've authored a type of therapy I call identity therapy that really tries to achieve the psychic change in a short period of time. We have 8 weeks to treat people, so it's a speeded up way of addressing the issues in substance disorders. And that's the
wonderful,
end.
Wonderful. Thank you, Christopher. Fascinating. And that really props to you at 62 to get your master's degree. See, it's never too late.
It was wonderful. And if you're thinking about it, it's a wonderful thing to do when you have the experience behind you, and then you see the clinical stuff. And I said, "Oh my God, we know this stuff. It's amazing." So it was quite enjoyable.
Congratulations on that. That's wonderful. So I'm going to move over to Lisa, and then we'll talk with Colleen. So Lisa Richardson is the executive director for Sun Spry. Am I saying that? Sun Spry Health Hyde Park. So tell us, Lisa, all about what you do and how you serve in the addiction community.
Sure. Hello, everybody. My name is Lisa Richardson, and it's Sunspire Health. We are at the Hyde Park location, which is in beautiful South Tampa, Florida. It's nice and sunny out today, a little bit windy.
Oh, rainy here on our end on the East Coast, right?
Yeah. We're one block from the Bayshore, one block from the water, and we are a residential treatment facility for women only. So our mission is to help women recover and heal from substance abuse disorders so they can lead healthy, daring, and powerful lives. And that's what we try to do every day is help our women learn that they can be free from substances and they can have a healthy life and have power over their addiction, even if at times their addiction did make them feel powerless or become powerless, that they truly can have power over their addiction with the proper supports and help. We're a 25-bed facility. We practice motivational enhancement, CBT. We also have a lot of trauma work. We tend to have a lot of patients that come here with extensive needs when it comes to trauma. So there's a lot of trauma modalities. We tend to have a younger crew here, so we like to have fun and we do lots of activities and participate in many pathways to recovery approach. So we're not AA, we're not NA. We totally celebrate the fact that people find recovery in many different ways.
That's fantastic, Lisa. Thank you so much. And although you don't see her, we do have Colleen Hanny on the phone. I believe, Colleen, you're still with us. And she is an energy therapist and the founder of Communicating Energy Wellness Institute. So welcome, Colleen. And please tell us all about yourself and the wonderful work that you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've had 25 years as an energy therapist. Originally before that, I was a speech language pathologist. And what I began to find as I was working with my clients was that there was so much more to them. And I got down to the level of energy, which is actually our first and true language. So as an energy therapist for the past 25 years, I've served a vast population. Within the last 7 years, I've actually been serving the therapists and professionals who serve clients that are dealing with addiction. And from that, then they started referring their clients to me. And so I've been dealing with a lot of individuals, particularly adults, young adults and women. And what I find is that the biggest issue that psychologists or professionals refer clients to me for is that piece of helping individuals get physically in their bodies, energetically back into their bodies. Addiction is a very complex energy situation. And many times because of the trauma or the situation that the individual has been in, their energy has left their body. And so it's a wonderful experience to actually watch and help facilitate individuals' energies coming back into their body, coming alive again in a very, very different way. In addition to serving individuals in the arena of addiction, I also do a lot of work with anxiety disorders, manic depression, trauma of all kinds, and I specialize in those individuals that are sensitive. I myself spent many, many years being sensitive to everything and really responding to life in a very traumatic way. And so my expertise is really helping that individual who is a very sensitive being begin to realize there are ways to come into your body, be comfortable in your body, and to be empowered with the marvelous creation that we have in a physical body in a world that right now is very energetically traumatized.
That's very true. That's very Absolutely. Important work that you're doing, Colleen, and that's thank you so much for sharing that. So we're going to dive right in, and what we're going to do on the show with the state of addiction, what you need to know for 2018, is I've pulled some headlines out of in the last couple of days, hours, last week, of things that are going on right now that I feel people really need to know, because things change very quickly with what's happening in addiction. So we're going to go, you know, and discuss these things and your expertise of what's going on. The first thing that just came out, I believe this was yesterday, and I don't know if anybody is familiar with this, but the FDA approved the first non-opiate treatment for management of opiate withdrawal symptoms in adults. This is a drug, and I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation because these drugs always have long names. It's Lucemyra. So Lucemyra, I'm not sure how the proper pronunciation of that is. Has any of you experts heard of this drug or heard the breaking news on this? And what are your thoughts about treating, opiate addiction with, using another drug? Because I know there are some addiction professionals who are against that and others who are for that. So we can start with Robin. What is your thoughts?
Well, I read about it, and it said it's a short course of use. It's about 12 days, I think they said. It's for withdrawal symptoms. I came up through this field in the old school, so it was all about, abstinence and stuff like that. And I've since, you have to keep an open mind and you have to keep changing with times. And there are, like Lisa said, many different pathways to people getting well. However, I always find, the problem is drugs and the solution is drugs. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of on the fence about it. And big pharma is, if we're talking about the opioid crisis, which is kind of what you want to discuss, that was created by big pharma. And now here we go. Big pharma now has the solution. So
interesting.
I don't know. I think we need to turn to whatever we can use. However, we need to keep that in mind, And people people have relapsed regardless of whatever drug therapy they've been on anyway. So
that's absolutely true.
Treatment is not drug treatment anyway. Yes.
Thank you. Christopher, what are your thoughts? Have you heard about this new drug and about this, that this has come out? And do you agree with Robin that, it's just another big pharma way to make money and that they're, or is this something that people who are watching the show right now who are dealing with a loved one with the opiate addiction, should they be asking their doctors about when this is going to be available? Or is it, I know FDA approval, but it could be approved, but it could take quite some time before it actually gets into the hands of addicts. So what are your thoughts?
So I think that, we talk about these wonderful medications, when people are terminally ill, we have these pain relievers to allow them to be reasonably comfortable. And so the end of life is not screaming and yelling in agony that we spend end of life with people. So on the one hand, the substances provide a great assistance to us, but there's always side effects. So everything good has its bad side. And what's happened is that my experience, I've seen probably 1500 clients. I do mostly groups. Most of them either started with innocuous drugs like marijuana and alcohol, or they had a trauma and someone loaded them up with opiates and they become addicted to it. And they come in, they talk about it. I have baseball players. Anyway, so I have a chapter in the book on medication assisted treatment, and it's important to understand the definition. It's medication assisted treatment. I think that the panel will agree with me that addiction is very complex. The substance is only 1/4 of it. There's biological, psychological, social, and moral issues. And we could go through all that, but if you give someone a substance to help them feel comfortable, they never learn how to be comfortable without substances. The human brain is the most remarkable thing we know of in the universe. And what it does is it has an experience. There's a feeling that goes with the experience. We use that feeling to govern our behavior in the future. And we learn how to be comfortable in our own skin. As long as I'm using a substance, I block that whole process of taking experience, feeling what I feel, thinking about it, and adapting my behavior. So I think that people who continue, there are some people who can never get off of substances. They've damaged their brain. I have people who can't talk. I have people who have chronic vertigo. So, but the real goal is to be a whole human being, if we can, and not everybody can do that, be a whole human being, to be free of all substances and experience life authentically, be comfortable in my own skin.
Great. Well, thank you, Christopher. So Lisa, your thoughts on this, as far as Robin mentioned, this is a 12-day, so it's limited, and it is for withdrawal symptoms. Are you going to be using this in your treatment center? Are you looking at this, or what are your thoughts? I think we lost your sound. Can everybody else hear?
I can't hear her.
No, I can't.
We lost your sound, Lisa, somehow.
Okay, sorry about that.
She's back.
Okay.
I think the key is that it's a non-opioid, right? So, traditionally someone might go to a methadone clinic and get methadone or Suboxone. So I think the thing that is interesting about this new medication is that a lot of people are not supportive of, let's say, methadone, because methadone in itself can be addictive if not used properly. Whereas the thing that is exciting and interesting about this substance is that has the ability to help people with withdrawal symptoms, but in itself is not an addictive substance. It's a non-opioid. So, you know, I haven't done a ton of proper research to really give my full opinion on it, and I always like to see how patients do before I give an opinion on anything. But personally, I think that we are fans of medication-assisted treatment, and it works for a lot of people. And I totally understand that there's a philosophy that says no substances, period, regardless of if they're considered medication or not medication. And there's a lot of people that still feel that they're drugs. But personally, I've seen a lot of people get well, and there's a lot of research out there that shows that people truly do get well with medication-assisted treatment. So we definitely utilize, you know, for instance, Vivitrol. That's something that we will utilize, which is, you know, injectable medication that can help people. And that is something that we will utilize at our facility. We are not licensed for, say, Suboxone or something like that. But this might be an option for us because if it's a non-controlled substance, it might be something that we could, you know, look into. Definitely think that medication-assisted treatment is the wave of the future, and there's a lot of people that do get well on it. There's also a lot of people that it's not good for. They're not able to manage it, and, you know, just really need to provide truly individualized care for patients.
Thank you, Lisa. That's very interesting. You, like you're saying, it could be case by case, not good just blanketly for everybody, but this could be important for people, for some people, and this could be another option for something with a non-opiate. So let's get Colleen's opinion on this. Colleen, what is your thoughts on this new drug? Have you heard about it? And what are your thoughts?
Okay, I have not heard of it up until you just mentioning it today. What I would like to say, just as a preface, is that everything is energy. So if we really start to embody everything as energy, that medication, that drug, whatever, that treatment, whatever you're using is energy, and it carries a certain vibration. So depending on what the body needs, what the body wants, what the energy of that being needs, then you take a look at what's appropriate. The other thing I will mention is that addiction is a symptom, which I'm sure everyone is aware of. And as Chris and also Robin were saying, that taking care of the symptom isn't really the issue. You know, we start with the symptom, which is typical to Western medicine. That's what Western medicine does. Like Robin, I too use much more of a holistic approach and looking at, you know, what is going on in the energy system of the person and what would help facilitate that energy system becoming whole again. I do have the approach that the body can heal itself of anything. If it is supported, if the circuits are connected again. We really are electrical beings, and sometimes I even call myself an electrician, so that when those circuits get back together again, the body does have incredible miraculous powers to heal itself. So it's not an easy answer, but I always go back to everything is energy. And how does that energy relate to the body, the energy system that that individual person is? And that goes across the board with everything.
Great. That is, I believe that too. I believe we're all energetic beings. So that makes a lot of sense. So moving on to our next topic and headline in the news. Sadly, we probably all heard of the death of Margot Kidder, who, if you don't know who she was Lois Lane from all the Superman movies. And us older people here, well, not saying you're all older, but I know who she is, but the 20-year-olds might not. But unfortunately, she, you know, suffered from mental illness and homelessness. So there's, you know, an epidemic of homelessness, addiction, and recovery. There's a big problem with that. You know, she had a battle with mental health and addiction. So did Carrie Fisher. So did a lot of celebrities. And so did many people. And it's probably one of the hardest addictions to treat, this dual diagnosis. And we do see a lot of people on the streets, you know, homeless because they're mentally ill and have addiction as well. So starting with Robin, what are your thoughts on this? Anything that, you know, new that we, for a loved one who's watching right now and they have someone they love who's addicted, who also maybe is bipolar or suffering from some order other dual diagnosis, what would your advice be for them with the latest information that you know today?
I'm always in favor of the family members treating themselves first. You know, we always say put the oxygen mask on yourself before you can help other people. So I always recommend family members going to Al-Anon or Naranon or some form of support, because the method of the way people will care for, and I'm going care for, we can love people to death, and people can end up, you know, worse off than they were. As far as homelessness goes, you know, that's certainly a tragedy. And I've seen many clients that worked in treatment, and when they leave, or they've been homeless before, or they AMA and they're out, you know, on the streets, and it's scary and terrifying. And yet it does not affect, you know, the craving and the desire to keep using. So, you know, I don't know if anybody can, you know, prevent someone from being homeless in terms of taking, you know, enabling them to the point where, or kicking them out. I know some people are in favor of tough love, and I don't think love is tough ever, you know, so I would never suggest someone to, you know, create that scenario for somebody. But, you know, Margot Kidder, I mean, I think the mental illness piece, and like Colleen was saying, the energy that goes with that, really needed to be treated. And the drug use is just a secondary symptom and a way of a person trying to get that balance back, you know. That's, and unfortunately, it's a vicious circle.
Thank you, Robin. Yeah, that's definitely true. Christopher, what are your thoughts about this, about, you know, the dual diagnosis? And it's one of the hardest, I know, ways to treat an addict, and your experience with it.
So there are two distinct conditions. There's a dual diagnosis where someone has something organic that they've been treating with medication and they're abusing their medication. There are things we call co-occurring disorders that are really evidence of the use of the drug. You can have someone, you know, you take someone off of opiates and for the first 60 days, they're depressed. And that's not a dual diagnosis, that's co-occurring. It's caused by the opiate. And we can say to them, listen, you stay clean and sober, or you take your medication the way we tell you, and that depression will pass. There are other people for whom it will not. So there's a distinction there. And on the topic of homelessness, I think that we're talking about that, and you call it addiction, I call it a substance disorder. They say you're an addict. There's no such thing as an addict, and, you know, you can be addicted, but you're not. That's, it's like saying that a person with anorexia is an anorexic. So in clinically, we try to help people to understand you're not a defective person. You have a disorder, and that can be treated. When you're talking about homelessness, so addiction is biological, psychological, social, and moral. The biological is a physical addiction. It's psychological. Most 70% of all the women, Samson tell us that 70% of all the women presenting have trauma with disorders, and the ones without the trauma recover quickly. So your population of people in treatment gets to be like 90% trauma. And those people are not trying to get high. They're self-injurious. Relapse is not about getting high. It's about being self-destructive. They've lost the joie de vivre. They lost the desire to live. So anyway, to go to it. So the homelessness is a social issue. In our country, we have not allocated adequate resources to treat either substance disorders or homelessness. We just haven't. It's not important enough to us. And I'll go quickly to, I'm talking to a police officer, and we're a little bit, and I said, it's really difficult when you walk in and there's a 23-year-old young lady who's died of an overdose. And he says, no, it doesn't bother me. She's a junkie. So there's this whole thing in society where people are afraid of the compassion. It's painful for them. So they try to distance themselves. And so we don't want to allocate the resources for homelessness. Real quickly, I'm in treatment. I got a guy comes in. He's 10 days out of detox. And I'm talking about getting sober. And he says, are you kidding me? He says, I got no driver's license. I have one felony. I'm facing another felony. My family won't talk to me. And I'm homeless. What are you going to do for me? So in treatment, we have to have a case manager who addresses those issues. We get them food stamps. We have a plan for where they're going to go after they get clean and sober, because these people need a place to go. And I could go on for another 20 minutes, but I won't stop.
Thank you, Christopher. Now, you bring up some really good points about that. And it's true. We do have that stigma of addiction where it's easier for us to blame the addict. You know, it's easier for us to say, well, it's their choice. It's their fault. They're the junkie. They're the one, you know, it is a defense mechanism, because then we can somehow justify in our minds, well, they're bad and they deserve this, and not realizing that it's a disease and it can really happen to anyone. you know, and anyone in your family. So I think that's a whole other subject of education. Lisa,
can I quick comment what Robin said? You're real quick. They talk about detach with love. In Florida, we have the Marchman Act. And you can go down to the Riviera Beach Drug Court in Palm Beach County and sit down in a little room and fill out the forms. And they will bring the person in, evaluate them right then, and send them to treatment. And it usually takes about a week. You can get them insurance by the time you send them to treatment. And I want to tell you, people say they need to want it. That's not true. People who are forced into treatment have the same or higher recovery rate than people who go voluntarily.
That's interesting. Okay, very, very interesting. So that's an interesting tool as well. So Lisa, your thoughts on this with the, you know, with a dual co-occurring, dual diagnosis, you know, the fact that a lot of people who are suffering from this will become homeless or kicked out of their families, can't deal with it, and they're not getting the treatment. What are your thoughts on this?
Sure. Well, I don't know who Margot is, but we definitely.
Well, do you remember Superman with Christopher Reeve? Or you're too young? Yeah, you look young. How old are you? You're like 30. Well, there was another Christopher Reeve who broke his neck. He was Superman.
Yes.
She was the Lois Lane in those movies.
Okay, got it.
Okay, I forget. See, like I'm really dating myself here.
I learned something new today. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's been said already that dual diagnosis is, you know, complicated, and it's necessary to treat both the addiction and the underlying mental health conditions. But, you know, housing is something that we're super passionate about. And personally, you know, I believe that if people don't have their basic needs met, then how is it that they're supposed to get help and supposed to get well? If they don't have a place to call home, how are they supposed to get help and how are they supposed to get well? And that's part of what, you know, led me to this position here at Sunspire Health, is the fact that I'm just really passionate about providing a safe place for women so that they can heal. And, you know, because we're a residential facility, I feel like we can provide a home for women away from home. Even if it's not, you know, ideally where they'd like to be, it's a safe place where they're able to heal. And I just really believe that it's so, so important for someone who is struggling with mental health or substance abuse issues to have a place that is safe that they can call home. So, you know, I'm really happy that we can provide that. You know, we typically don't see a big homeless population within our facility because it's mostly, you know, private pay or private insurance. But we see plenty of women who, you know, have been kicked out of their parents' house or left an unhealthy relationship, or, you know, they're in a life situation where they don't have anywhere to go. And that sometimes that is what has gotten them to the place where they finally said, you know what, I need help. I have nowhere to live, and this addiction has gotten out of control. So sometimes for us, that's the starting point of when they realize that they really need help, is when they have nowhere to go to. And so they come to us, and we're happy to help them. So.
Well, I'm so glad that you provide that resource. Thank you so much, Lisa. Colleen, what are your thoughts? I know, Colleen, you probably know who Margot Kidder is, right?
Oh, right. I do.
Okay. So you heard about it. And so, you know, she struggled both with you know, the mental illness all her life. What are your thoughts now is from an energy perspective on this?
Well, once again, I will say everything is energy. So it's all about the energy. And Christopher, I want you to add an energy component to your list. If you think about homelessness, that means you don't have a home. And again, this goes back to what I was saying before. They're not in their bodies. So even if we're providing them with a physical place to stay, they need to get their energy back in the body. And this is where that component about really realizing how energetically sensitive we are. As the years have changed within these last 5 to 7 years, each one of us individually have become more sensitive beings. And there are beings that are even more sensitive. And so to me, it all relates to what's the sensitivity of this energy being, that, you know, we have individuals that feel everything, that they pick up others' energies, that everything in the environment affects them. This is the kind of person that I see walking to my office more and more each day, that we really are realizing that we are energy bodies and we're sensitive. You know, we're made up of energy. That energy is subtle. That energy is dynamic, meaning it's constantly moving. You would not believe the normal, quote, normal people that walk into my office. And when we begin to look at the energy, we find out that they're only 20% them, and they've got energy from their parents, their teachers, you know, their husband. And it's like, so who is here? Who is this person operating this body? And so it's interesting to see when you see bipolar, manic depression, dual diagnosis, how many energies are operating in this person. So it opens up a whole other arena of what are we talking about? Who is this person that we're treating? I've actually had individuals, I do a lot of work also with cancer patients, and I'll have people come here kind of as a last resort that they've done all the treatments in the world and nothing has worked. And then when I ask the body, you know, who is in the body, you'll find out that all these treatments were done on an energy that isn't even really the person. Now, I know this may sound weird, and it may sound like we're all schizophrenic, but in reality, you know, we have so much now bombarding our energy systems, you know, our physical body. We've got cellular waves, we've got cell phone, you know, we've got all this stuff that we never had before. So our physical body, which is electric, is having to deal with all these electricities, all these feelings, all these emotions. Remember, everything is energy. So
just to jump in here, Colleen, just to say, so if somebody's listening to this and they're not understanding this, you know, because this is more metaphysical and spiritual, it's the same thing. Like, you know, if you watch the news and you're feeling lousy after because you're like all day long watching, you're taking on that energy from negativity,
exactly.
And you're putting that in your body. So I think what you're saying basically is, yes, people are very sensitive in this world, and a lot of us are more and more sensitive, where we're too exposed to everything. You know, back in 100 years ago when there was no TV, people didn't know what was going on in California, or they didn't know that somebody died in China, a horrific death or in a fire. Right. Or now we know everything about everything in the world. So I think that's probably been a problem too. We're taking on a lot of that negativity and sadness from with our electric, because we were so exposed to it and open to it now. And that probably could be definitely causing, I think definitely could be contributing to some of these mental illnesses and to addiction. So we have a couple more topics here I just wanted to cover here, because there was some interesting stuff. I don't know if you all have heard about this was a shocking headline that I read, that nursing homes routinely refuse people who are seeking addiction treatment. Now, some experts say this is illegal. So basically what's happening is if a patient's in a regular hospital and they have to be transferred to...
You're breaking up, Christina.
Have you guys heard of anything about this?
You broke up there, Christina.
I see you back. Robin, can you hear me? You guys see all?
Can you see me?
Now you're back.
Yeah. No, now it's frozen for her.
Well, if you want, I'll quickly comment. I had a client who actually ended up in a nursing home. He had COPD, and the only way they could manage him was with medication. So he was managed with medication for a couple of years before he finally passed from COPD, but they couldn't get him off he was on benzodiazepines and he couldn't get off of them. He would panic and then he would suffocate, and the nursing home took really good care of him. He was so far gone that they couldn't. And I'll quickly address the energy thing. I'm controlled by legislation that I can't do anything that isn't evidence-based. And basically what we focus on addiction as an attachment disorder. We talk the trauma, we talk about deficiencies in early caregiving. A large percentage of our clients are adopted. They early separation from the birth mother. So most of our treatment is to model.
Lost,
are you back? Yeah, are you back?
I think I am back. Let me just end.
You're
sorry,
back and then some.
You're back times two.
Now I'm on twice. Let me see how to get rid of this. Sorry.
No, you're okay now. No, you're okay.
You're good.
There you go.
Hang up on this here. Okay. Oh, okay. We're back. I'm sorry. I don't know if you guys were still on during that time. I got kicked off. Okay. You guys weren't. Did you discuss that issue? because I missed that.
Christopher was saying
Christopher
something.
Got it.
I ad-libbed.
He got it.
Wonderful. Okay, great. Sorry about that. Yeah, somehow I got booted off, but thank God you guys didn't. So let me move up to another very serious topic here. I don't know if you guys have also heard that drug makers have jacked up the NALA, and I'm terrible, who can pronounce this for me? N-A-L-O-X-O-N-E.
Naloxone.
Okay, these drugs are prices, putting it beyond the reach of those trying to rescue opiate overdose victims. So has anybody had experience with this, that these prices have gone up, and what are your thoughts about that?
You can obtain a naloxone kit from any pharmacy in Florida without a prescription. And there's actually federal grant dollars available that have gone down through many local organizations where if you're interested, you can get a naloxone kit for free. So
Where's that resource? Is that just here in Florida or is that, you said, federal?
I know in Florida, I know that several states who had high percentages of overdoses did receive federal grant dollars for the opiate epidemic. And one of the ways that they're using that is to provide free kits. So I know that there are several, if you go to your lead mental health agency, or you know, one of the large nonprofits that has any type of opiate program, they typically will have received that funding. So I am aware that, yeah, they have increased the pricing, but my opinions would probably take way too long to discuss right now.
Well, you know,
but
I also know if you're somebody watching this now, okay, thank
yeah,
you.
Their resources
if somebody
available.
Doesn't know what it is, can Lisa, you tell us exactly what this kit is? What for somebody who's watching now thinking, what are we talking about? Just explain what it is.
So you're talking about Narcan?
Our yes. Naloxone.
Yeah,
Narcan.
Yeah.
It would be Narcan or Naloxone. So this
so
is
someone
the same
has suffered from an overdose, in particular an opiate overdose, then it is a kit that you can administer. Anyone could use. There's directions right on the kit. It's very simple to help the person to make sure that they essentially don't die from an overdose.
This is really important. Yeah, and the fact that a drug company would jack up the prices. I'm going to get Christopher's opinion. Then I'm going to move over to Robin and Colleen on the whole moral energetic side of this, that they would even do that. So Christopher. Okay. I'm going to come to you in one sec, Colleen. I just want to ask.
Well, I was just wondering, did you see in the paper that since we're discussing this, did you see last night's paper that Florida is bringing a lawsuit against all big pharma that had to produce any kind of opioids?
I did not see that.
There are now lawsuits that have been filed against these companies. So it's very interesting that once again, as we started with a drug to
yeah.
take care of an issue, but now Florida is the leading a file suitor in regards to big pharma because of all the deaths that have happened here, and that Florida was this candy land for giving everybody opiates from all over the United States. So it was in the paper yesterday that the suits have been filed and more states are coming forward, as well as individuals filing suits against the pharmaceuticals that make the opioids.
We also, Florida has a large geriatric population, and a lot of elderly people are being prescribed opiates for just general aches and pains or whatever. And eventually,
you're
not necessarily, you know, what someone would say in the old days, like a junkie, but you are chemically dependent and you are addicted physically to these drugs. So, you know, they're just readily given out. And that was really the big problem. People were always using opiates for many, many years. Heroin was available, you know, but it wasn't as popular. It depends on, you know, but now it's an epidemic, because it's included in such a larger population.
The TV show Roseanne, you know, that came back again on TV.
Yeah.
The issue this week is that Roseanne was given pain pills for her knee, and now she's addicted.
Oh, that's interesting. Good that the show's bringing that out. So Christopher, let us know your thoughts on all of this.
Two things. First of all, I have revived a client, taken him to treatment, and they overdosed in the car. And and we've revived a client, the naloxone. I actually had a friend who went on a campaign to provide free Narcan for all the first responders and saved a lot of lives. About 6 weeks ago, we had a client leave AMA, a young man, and we sent his mother a Narcan kit, and he overdosed 2 weeks later, and she saved his life, and he's back in treatment. So that's huge. And I want to quickly address the opiate epidemic. They prescribe opiates. There's a condition called hyperalgesia. If you take pain relievers long enough, the pain management system in the human body it atrophies and it loses its ability to manage pain. So now you're taking opiates to manage your back pain. So you're mm-hmm. masking the pain and you're injuring yourself more. So you need more opiates. So it's more profound than just becoming an addiction. The opiate ends up causing the pain right. that you're taking the opiates for. So the yeah. physician gives you the pain reliever and he creates the pain and you got to come back every month. And exactly. he charges your insurance company $250 every month to do a prescription. So there are people who can get off of the opiates and their pain goes away.
I mean, and that's absolutely true. And it's a vicious cycle. But, you know, these drug makers, I mean, we will villainize them because actually they do things that do perceive them as villains. I mean, the fact that they're jacking up something that saves addicts' lives, people who are, you know, that literally saves lives, and they're going to take advantage of that is deplorable, in my opinion. And I think everybody should, you know, take action and, you know, I don't know what you can do, you know, if these companies leave, you know, things on their business pages or contact them and say that this is unacceptable. I mean, a life-saving drug, the same thing they did with the EpiPen recently. They wound right. up backing mm-hmm. down for public pressure yes. because you don't do that. I mean, it's just morally corrupt and wrong and to make a profit and to put a beat, you know. Thankfully, like Lisa pointed out, there are some free resources. Everybody should have this kit. If you find that it's too expensive, contact the state that you're in, the health department, I believe would probably be a good start, and ask about it. A lot of people don't realize that there are programs out there that even drug companies, they don't advertise it, but they have programs to help people who don't have insurance, and they have, you know, that you can apply for these things, and every state is individual. So if you're watching this, make sure that you do, you know, don't be discouraged if something you feel is, you know, you can't afford it. There's help out there for you, and each state does have it. You just have to do a little bit of research on it. So I'm going to move on to another subject now that is another kind of shocking kind of thing that there's somebody doing. There's a funeral director. I don't know if you heard about this. He is trying to scare mission. He believes fear can help stop addiction. So he works with teens in Staten Island. Staten Island has been really hit very badly with people dying, you know, kids dying. I know my kids, we moved to Florida 11 years ago from Old Bridge, New Jersey. A lot of people from Staten Island go to New Jersey. And even in New Jersey, there was, I'm glad I moved because it was really bad, but, you know, after we had moved. But anyway, he's working with these teens and he's showing scrolls of death certificates. He's trying to jolt these kids from using drugs. Do you guys think this type of tactic will have a lasting impression? Will it work? We'll start with Robin.
I mean, I kind of giggled a little when I heard that because that's, I don't know. I mean, that's like Nancy Reagan, just say no.
It doesn't really
affect the real issues, such as Chris was saying, the attachment issues, the trauma, the co-occurring, the relationships that are, you know, painful, that cause people to seek out. People use drugs because drugs work. They numb pain. So it's no, you know, it's no accident that happens. We live in it. There is a lot of painful energy going on out there and people are using these drugs to numb themselves from that. I don't know, scaring people. I mean, yeah, that scares me. I just want to say it
yeah,
like that.
I don't think that helps. It didn't work in the 80s. It's probably not going to work
now.
That's
not loving and not compassionate. And I mean, I work that way too, Chris. I'm all about, you know, love and compassion. And that's the energy I want to put out. And people, you know, people will use drugs no matter what. And drug addicts will use drugs if it's sunny, if it's not sunny, if it's a good day, a bad day. So a list of names or, you know, coffins in front of them, I don't know. I honestly, I don't think that would work. But, you know, hey, if it's one person, maybe, but I don't think it'll work.
What about you, Christopher? What are your opinion on that?
Some of the dual diagnosis, the co-occurring disorders you'll have, is clients present with R62.7, which is adult failure to thrive. Guy in group yesterday says to me, he says, I don't really care if I die. So telling him if you use, you're going to die, he's going to go use. He gets more depressed and he's going to go. And if you tell him, you know, tell him that. And the other one is the Z91.5, which is parasuicidal behavior. I said to a guy last night, I said, listen, so you're standing in front of your rig and say, if I do this, I could die. And you do it anyway. He goes, yes, he's not afraid. He doesn't, sometimes he doesn't think he's not going to die, but there's an internal mechanism of self-destruction that's similar to anorexia, where anorexia makes no logical sense and they can't stop. And that's what happens with substance disorders. And so, and I'll tell you, when you Narcan somebody, guess what the most common response is? Why didn't you let me die? So people are on a pathway to death and we hug them. I don't criticize them. I don't scare them. I hug them. I say, and the one thing I sell them on is I say to them, you know, there will come a time when you have an experience that far exceeds the joy you had from using. And it won't be in the moment, but it'll be all day. You'll feel good all day. And it's about secure attachment. And I said to a guy yesterday, I said, so, you know, what's going to happen to you is you're going to be married and your 9-year-old boy is going to come up and give you a hug. And you'll think, I'm so glad I'm sober. So I try to get them to think about what it's like to be sober.
Great. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't think this is very effective. What about you, Lisa? What's your opinion about Scared Straight and Scary Funeral Director?
Yeah, research related to Scared Straight programs and anything that has to do with fear-based mentality, it's been proven to not be effective. It doesn't help people change their behavior. And that's because it's looking at an external point of motivation, right? Saying like, I'm externally going to try to do things to you to try to help you to change.
Right.
It's almost like
lasting itself is internal change. And it's all about internal motivation and desire to change. So I would not support that tactic. And I can understand and I appreciate anyone that's trying to help our epidemic because I mean, this is something that requires whole communities and families and individuals to come together to help solve this problem. So, I mean, I appreciate this guy's motivation, but his approach, I don't think is going to be effective.
I agree. And what about you, Colleen? I mean, from a, you know, from your viewpoint on this, what are your feelings?
Well, I agree that any kind of scare tactics actually turn off the energy in the brain. So they're not getting where they need to be getting. But I do believe that we need to, Chris mentioned this, get younger and younger children, younger and younger teens to know their body, know their energy, get skills for resiliency, and also, you know, recognize that pain is really contracted energy. And, you know, pain can be a messenger to take a look of what's going on. It can be a gift rather than something that we have to, in fact, medicate or numb out. So there are lots of ways that we can be moving to younger and younger individuals and give them that support, give them a home in their own physical body so that these things don't occur later on.
And that's a very good point. I was just looking over here while you were talking, a comment came in from Peggy. Peggy says, it's an epidemic and I am one of the grandparents raising a grandchild because of it, the addiction, opiate epidemic. And that's becoming, it's a whole other issue that there are grandmothers now and grandfathers, you know, I was at the dermatologist with my daughter and waiting for her. And I was talking to with a grandma, I had a baby in a carriage, and she's exactly what she said. She said, my daughter, you know, is an addict. She overdosed and I got custody of the baby and he's a year old. She was bringing the baby to the doctor. And he was born on drugs. So he's had health problems. And unfortunately her daughter was pregnant again. And she didn't know what she was going to do. She goes, I'm, you know, 60 years old. This is hard to start over and take care of a baby. So, you know, we feel for you, Peggy, you know, pray for you and pray for all the grandparents out there who are stepping in now to keep these kids out of foster care and taking care of their grandkids while this horrible epidemic is raging, because we really need that. These children are the innocent victims of this horrible disease that we're all facing. So I wanted to, you know, well, there's one more question I wanted to, that Robin had brought up, and I didn't respond because I didn't get a chance to write her back. But Robin, tell us about, this is something else that just came out. There's a state you were talking about with gambling, that they're now approving treatment for gambling addiction. Is that, am I getting that
no,
right?
I said the Supreme Court just passed legislation that to legalize sports betting across, normally it was just in Nevada.
Oh,
and
okay.
Some other states. New Jersey was the state that pushed for that all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided that states would be able to legislate that for themselves, because it's, they said 150 billion, but it's really an $850 billion industry. And they want to get, I guess the states want some of that money, but that's another thing that I'm very familiar with, treating family members and gamblers. And it's talk about an addiction that is very difficult to make sense of. They don't, it's an obsession of the mind, and you know, you're not going to pass out, but there's a very high incidence of suicide. Almost 80% have suicide ideation at some point. And you know, many, and even though it's a very small percentage of our population, only 1 to 3% of people have compulsive gambling disorder, but that's still 3 to 5 million people. That's still a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So
that's,
you know,
and you know, with, I think with gambling, a lot of times it's a secondary, like, you know, somebody maybe swaps out one addiction for another.
Absolutely. I see so many people who are sober for many years in AA, and they because it's fun, it's entertainment, it starts out, you know, mild and fun. And then it becomes very serious, because that mentality and the addiction kind of morphs. And we used to say that people, you know, change seats on the Titanic, and so they're going down, and it's deadly. It really is. And families are decimated by that. I mean, your whole home and all your savings can be wiped out by somebody's run. You know, there's no Narcan for that. We need something like that. And
exactly.
I don't know
how with this new, so what you were saying, I totally misread your email, I'm sorry. So basically what you're saying is that the Supreme Court has now said that it is okay for sports gambling throughout the country. So now
sports betting has been illegal, except in Nevada. They really have cornered the market, but now all the states can regulate that if they want to.
Isn't that interesting? It's just another example of money and greed coming before the what can happen to, we've got people already, we're suffering from an addiction, you know, epidemic, and like you said, this is an easy one for people to switch over to or start, and now we're just going to create more problems by
We also, again, we have an elderly population here in Florida, and a lot of people at that stage of their life, they're lonely, they're displaced from, you know, they moved down here, maybe they're on fixed incomes, and a lot of their friends are passing away, maybe their spouse passed away, and they're bored, and they're not retired, so they're not working, and then they go to the casino, and then everybody's like, you know, your buddy, and every, you know, it's something to do, and everybody knows your name, and it's just there, that's a very, very vulnerable population, as well as young kids.
Exactly.
That's a huge,
exactly.
Prevention is real, education and prevention is like really one of the most important things that we can do. And I honestly, I've worked in treatment for many years, and people touched on that. I mean, it's really not addressed to the level that it should
it's
be.
It's not addressed to the level. Christopher, do you have, what is your experience with gambling addiction, and what are your thoughts on this new Supreme Court law allowing sports betting in every state?
I would say to you that substance disorders are a symptom of our society. The death of the extended family, children, you know, what a concept. Your grandparents spend time with you. I mean, what a concept. In our country, it doesn't happen. Our God is money. We get up and we say, if you're going to be happy, you need this car. And so there's a whole culture that makes people focus on things other than intimacy as the ultimate goal. And I'll just tell you really quickly, the gambling is about adrenaline and dopamine. And adrenaline and dopamine have about a 3.5 minute half-life. Yeah. So you get a dopamine rush and it's gone. But oxytocin is what you get when you hold a baby. And the half-life of oxytocin is about 10 hours. So the recovery fellowship is about creating intimate, safe, loving relationships connected to people that make us feel secure, and we don't need the other stuff. And so I always work on the recovery aspect, not the fear of using. And gambling is just another one. I have a guy in group last week, he loves jumping out of airplanes because it scares him. I have another guy just broke his arm and his leg, and he's in recovery because he loves riding dirt bikes, because they're still using adrenaline instead of oxytocin. Instead of getting a hug, they're working on a motorcycle. And so I think that's, and it's a profound, it's the substance disorders are a profound symptom of our society.
That's a really great point. What about you, Lisa? What is your thoughts? Have you seen this kind of, you know, people coming in, like Christopher's talking about adrenaline junkies being, you know, addicts as well, and gambling?
Well, I think that it's, as mentioned, for one addiction to replace it with another. And that's something that we see all the time, whether, you know, it's gambling or issues with food, eating disorders, or relationship having, you know, codependency. I mean, it's just a common thing with that. You know, we will have some people that use gambling as a means to chase that high. It's just in an alternate way. You know, in terms of the new law, I think where people go or where they turn, if they really are released, they're not healthy and centered and are chasing things that are not going to be in some sports betting place or through drugs or through some unhealthy relationships. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is that's out there. So I don't really have a strong opinion on, you know, the gambling law changes at all, because, you know, if they're seeking that high, they're going to find it one way or the other. If it's not through drugs, possibly through something else, if they're still unhealthy. So
that's a good point. Yeah, definitely. What now, Colleen, what about you? What are your thoughts about this, with this new law coming out now? Do you think it's going to increase the gambling addiction, or is it just another, you know, like we said, people will get, and that's a really good point Lisa brought up, because, you know, there's people who abuse, you know, they'll take the whipped cream can and, you know, suck that in, or go to Home Depot and get high off of substances there. I mean, people want to get high, they're going to get high. So Colleen, what is your opinion about this?
Well, I agree with that. That what I had heard, I actually heard an interview yesterday about this whole thing on NPR, and they had an ethicist, and they were saying that yes, they really thought this was going to be an innocent kind of a gaming that people bet on the football game, but it would turn into a much more severe issue, and they were predicting it was going to be the next epidemic. So that piece, though, that moves into that adrenaline high, if people are looking for that everywhere. I have a lot of clients that I refer to as my gym rats. You know, they're always at the gym. They're always pushing themselves. They're pumping. They're spinning. And that's the same. You know, when they come into my office, I can feel that adrenaline high in their physical body through the energy. And I actually have a couple of clients I've been working with to bring them down from that adrenaline high of having to go to the gym every single day. So at least that's a little more socio-appropriate, but it's still that same thing, that there is a desire for that high. And actually, if you're in your body, the natural energy of the body is a high. And that touch that Christopher was talking about, that inclusion, that intimacy, is exactly what touch therapy provides.
Wow, very well. And on that note, since we are at the, a little bit after one, to wrap things up, I'm going to start with you, Colleen, since you're already on. I want each of you just to tell, you know, tell us exactly how the people who are watching today, they're looking for help for either themselves or a family member or a loved one, how they can get in touch with you. And so you can provide your phone number, email address, website URL. This way we can have that here. And if you can rewatch the show and put it in the comments as well, each guest, each panelist, so people can easily get in touch with you. Because I know there's going to be a lot of people watching out there. You know, they're looking for help. They need guidance, and whether it's for themselves or someone they love. So Colleen, we'll start with you. Just give us your contact information.
They can search online by my name, Colleen Haney, C-O-L-L-E-E-N. Last name Haney, H-A-N-E-Y. I do have a website. I am on Facebook, so they can find me either way. My phone number is 561 212-6862. And thank you so much for this opportunity. And my wish would be that everyone gets into their body and really knows the joy of being alive as an energy being in a physical body.
Well, thank you so much, Colleen. You've been a wonderful guest. Lisa, tell us how we can get in touch and the website URL, your phone number, anything they need to know to reach out.
Sure. So we are at Sunspire. health.com/use at the Sunspire Health website, and you'll be sure to find us. We also have a Facebook page if you just search Sunspire Health Park. My direct 833-322-HEALTH is patient treatment. You're not a woman and you have a
I don't know if you're the only one freezing up.
I'd be happy to help you find proper treatment.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa. You were freezing up a little bit, so I'm going to ask, definitely, guys, put your name this way. If anybody didn't hear that, I don't know if that recorded clearly or not, put all your contact information in the Addiction 911. It's both in our Florida Addiction Professionals group. It's in the Addiction 911 page. I've shared it with many different groups, but when you see it, just go to the Addiction 911 page and leave your comment with your contact information. This way people can go and scroll up and find that. Christopher, how can we get in touch with you and find out all about you and the HooBall and your how to buy your books?
Yeah, the books, medallionpublishing.com. It's www.medallionpublishing.com. The HooBall is great. If you're a mental health professional, it's a great tool. I have a book on treating people with treating addiction as an attachment disorder, and identity therapy, and about the failure to thrive. It's called, and I have a book on, if you don't understand addiction, I have a little book. It's 80 pages, tells you all about the pathology of addiction, the biological, psychological, the social, and the moral. And my email is cobryan1947@yahoo.com. That's it. And by the way, Christina, thank you. And I want to say also, Lisa's facilities has a wonderful reputation. I've had friends who refer women to her facility.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Christopher. You guys have been just absolutely amazing guests today. Robin, tell us how we can get in touch with you and, all your contact information.
So you can get in touch with me by my Facebook, which is Reach Higher Healing. And my website is www.reachhigherhealing.com. And I also want to thank everybody for sharing here today. And thank you, Christina. And I'm grateful to be part of this. And Colleen, I'm glad to find a good colleague, someone that I can, like-minded. And this is the work of the future, because it is about energy. And it is about healing from deep within, mind, body, and spirit. And so that's what I like to do and help families and individuals with that. So
wonderful. Well, guys, you guys have been incredible. And anybody watching this now, these are our experts. These are our panelists that you should reach out to and find out anything you need to know. They're willing to help you and your family. So feel free. They're going to put their information in the comments. Feel free to contact them and get the help for yourself and for anyone that you love. And just on a side note, our next show will be on May 31st, Thursday at noon. And we are, for the addiction professional, we have a lot of addiction professionals who are watching. And if you're in South Florida, I'm going to be announcing this week our next luncheon in Boca, which is, I hope you guys can join us. It's going to be on June 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Pavilion Grill. And we meet every other month, and it's a great group of addiction professionals. So I hope you guys, to see you guys all in person there on the June 21st. So again, thank you to everybody who's watching this. Please, you're not alone. We are here for you. Reach out. There are really caring, wonderful professionals in this industry, and that's who I bring you on the Addiction 911 Show, the best of the best. These are the people that you want to contact. So you can be rest assured that when you watch our shows that we've, we're only putting the best on the show. So I want to thank you guys. You guys are all wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.